Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathimerini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. The Biden administration announced on Monday that it will lift coronavirus travel restrictions for fully vaccinated travelers, reopening its borders for the first time in more than a year and bringing an end to the series of travel bans first imposed by President Donald Trump 18 months ago. This decision by the White House also answers a growing EU grievance that EU countries had opened up to non-essential U.S. travelers, but that Washington was not reciprocating for Europeans. The move to reopen travel between Europe and the U.S. was welcomed by European officials, the travel industry, and citizens who were not able to visit the U.S. since the beginning of the pandemic. Kieran Stacey, the Washington, D.C. correspondent for the Financial Times, joins us to break down this latest development. Kieran, welcome on to the Greek Current podcast. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Kieran, what can you tell us about the White House's announcement today regarding the lifting of travel restrictions on people from Europe and other countries who were not able to enter the United States since travel restrictions were imposed about 18 months ago?
That's right. So really, since nearly the start of the pandemic, people haven't been able to travel to the US from the EU, well, from the Schengen area and Ireland and the UK, but also a bunch of other countries, Iran, South Africa, Brazil, China, more recently India, have all been added to this list of banned countries. Now, the ban only applies really to non-citizens or those without green cards. So it hasn't affected Americans. It's just affected Europeans looking to travel into the US. And that's been majorly problematic for Europeans seeking to do business in the US, but also families who are separated by the Atlantic. And I say this as somebody who is in exactly that position with family back in the UK. I live here in Washington, D.C. My family haven't been able to visit for 18 months. So there has been a lot of pressure on the Biden administration to drop that policy. It was first put in place by Donald Trump, but it was reimposed by Joe Biden. And even as vaccinations have been rolled out across most of the continent, Joe Biden has held firm and not dropped the travel ban. But today, we finally got the announcement that as of early November, the travel ban, the blanket travel ban, will be dropped and replaced with a much more targeted policy. This is a policy that is going to apply to absolutely everywhere in the world, and it will demand that people are vaccinated before they travel to the US. So for some countries, it'll actually be a significant tightening of the rules, whereas you've been able to travel to the US from a lot of countries without restriction for the last 18 months. You will now have to get vaccinated and show proof of it. But for those countries that have been subject to the travel ban, for the UK, for Ireland, for mainland Europe, you will now be able to travel as long as you're able to prove that you have been doubly vaccinated, or at least you will be able to do so from early November.
Do you have any insight into what led to this shift in policy from Washington? Was there anything that was said from the CDC or from experts that have been monitoring the pandemic?
It's difficult to know exactly what triggered this. Back in the summer, the US and the UK and the EU announced that they would set up these working groups of experts from all sides to try and figure out how it might be possible to lift these travel bans. And they've been meeting every week for the last few months. But really, from what I've been told, the scientists on the US side were largely convinced of the case to reopen the borders several weeks ago. The problem has been resistance from within the White House. And the reason that there has been resistance from the White House has been pure politics. I think that people within the White House have long thought that if they reopened to vaccinated travelers, they didn't stand much of a risk of triggering another spike in cases. But they just didn't want to leave themselves vulnerable to an attack from the right that they had reopened the borders and lost control of the COVID pandemic. So there has been diplomatic pressure building for quite a while. But of course, this week, we've got a lot of foreign leaders in New York for the UN General Assembly. And I think that in the end, the White House decided, well, if we're going to lift them, and we are eventually, it's not a bad idea to announce this now when we have everybody in town and we can actually get some credit for making this announcement.
So the timing is everything in this announcement then?
I think that timing is really important for the announcement, but bear in mind that they're not going to actually reopen the borders until November. So there's still a lot of details that they have to figure out about how this is going to work, who it's going to apply to, and how it's going to be monitored. They now have 6 weeks to figure all those details out. I think in an ideal world, the White House might have liked to have sat on this announcement until they had figured out all those details. But the diplomatic and the public pressure became so strong that they thought they had to announce something while they had these foreign leaders in the U.S.
What should travelers know about the new U.S. travel system moving forward? I know you had a thread that you published on Twitter about this.
That's right. So the details we have so far is that you will need to be doubly vaccinated and, of course, have the 2 weeks post your second vaccination. You will need to be able to prove it. You will need to get a negative test within 72 hours of your departure. You will need to wear a mask on your flight, and you will need to hand over your email address and your phone number to allow U.S. authorities to be able to do contact tracing when you arrive. There are a couple of really significant questions here. One is, which vaccines will actually be accepted by the U.S.? And that is not an insignificant problem because, of course, the AstraZeneca vaccine, which has been used across the EU, has not been authorized here in the U.S. Now, I've been told that the U.S. will accept the AstraZeneca vaccine for passengers coming in, but they've got to figure out exactly what the terms are on which they do that. They don't want to throw open the door for somebody who's been vaccinated with any vaccine in the world, because there are some vaccines, I think, that the U.S. health authorities don't trust as much. So they've got to figure out where exactly they draw the line. The second question is, what's going to happen to children? And we expect that children 12 and under will be allowed to come in. I don't think there's any country in the world that has authorized their vaccines for children younger than 12. But what happens to the 12 to 18-year-olds? Will they say something like minors who are accompanied by their parents are allowed? Will they draw the cutoff at 16? I think they've still got to figure out the answers to all these questions. So that's what they've got to do in the next few weeks. And really, I would hope by end of October, we'll have certainty over the date, over which vaccines, and over who exactly will be eligible to travel.
Kieran, looking back at the last 18 months, can you talk about the impact that this travel ban has had on individuals and families? What were some of the challenges that people faced since the ban was put in place? And I know you have a personal story here as well.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to tell you my story because this has affected me as much as anybody else. It's not something that I particularly wanted to talk about before, because if you're a reporter reporting on this story, you don't want to make it about yourself. But now that the ban's been lifted, we had a baby here in Washington last year. She's now a year old. And we were able to get back to Europe this summer for the first time for the baby to meet her grandparents. She's 14, 15 months old and meeting her grandparents for the first time. That's a long time for her to wait. And we were only able to do so because she was a US citizen and we managed to get her US passport through. But lots of people in my situation have simply not been able to see their families. They've not been able to take newborn children over. They've not been able to visit ailing parents or grandparents. They've not been able to go to funerals, to christenings, to birthday parties, to weddings. So there's so much of ordinary life that has been disrupted. And that has been the case even while we've had high levels of vaccination in much of the EU for the last few months. So I think people have got very, very frustrated as they see life opening up here in the US, as they see Americans this summer have traveled very widely. And anybody who's been on a Greek beach this summer was bound to have stumbled across an American at some point. And I think it's been galling for a lot of people that travel was not allowed the other way. So, yeah, it's been immensely disruptive to people's personal lives. And of course, you know, a lot of businesses have complained. I work for the Financial Times, so we hear a lot from the business community. And a lot of business people have said this is becoming a real hurdle for us investing in the US. We just can't travel and talk to the people that we need to face to face. So I think jointly, those two groups of people, plus the Travel Association and the tourism industry themselves, have brought to bear enough pressure that the White House felt it had to act.
Speaking of the business community and the airlines, that's something that you cover in your piece on this announcement from the White House. What can you tell us about how the airline industry is reacting, how the tourism sector is reacting to this news?
Well, the airline industry and the tourism industry is unsurprisingly very, very pleased indeed. But there has been a slight difference, I think, in response in the last few months from the industries in Europe and the UK and the industry here in the US. So the UK airlines in particular, which rely very heavily on transatlantic travel, have been really banging the drum about this for a while. The US industry hasn't been quite as concerned, and that's because for American airlines, most of their revenue comes from internal US travel. So they're not so reliant on the transatlantic travel, and they haven't minded as much, which has also given the White House cover to keep the bans in place. You know, their own domestic industry is not being harmed here, so why would they need to reopen the borders and risk cases going up? But as I say, the European industry has been very badly impacted. And I think we saw the effect of that this morning when, as the FT broke the story, the share price of British airline companies suddenly jumped. I think IAG, their shares went up 11% just after we broke the story. So you can see what the impact is for those companies.
And hopefully people will be able to travel for the holidays coming in end of November and December as well.
I think that's right. The ban should be lifted in time for Thanksgiving in case anybody wants to travel to visit family in the US for Thanksgiving, and certainly should be gone in time for Christmas. So hopefully families will be reunited in time for Christmas.
Kieran, thanks for joining us on The Greek Current with this update and this analysis. It was great having you on.
Thanks very much for having me.
In other news, Greek authorities have begun moving asylum seekers living in a squalid camp on the island of Samos into a new facility on the island, where access will be more strictly controlled. Authorities have stressed the new camp, dubbed a closed control access center, and built to house 3,000 people, will have far better facilities than the old, dilapidated camp on the edge of the island's main town. Rights groups have raised concerns about the controlled nature of the camp. The EU-funded installation, one of five multi-purpose reception and identification centers due to open on Greece's frontline Aegean islands, was officially inaugurated on Saturday. The old camp on the edge of Vathi, the main town of Samos, will be shut down. Finally, with discussions on the new mutual defense cooperation agreement between Athens and Washington ongoing, sources have told Kathmerini that regardless of the form this deal will take, a second naval base will be created at Souda on Crete. Athens wants to gradually create a naval base that can increasingly include a large number of fleet units. As far as the technical part of the negotiations for the MDCA are concerned, Greece's most pressing request concerns the integration of the air and naval facilities on the island of Skyros, which the United States Armed Forces will be able to use on a rotating or a fixed basis. Foreign Minister Nikos Dendias will go to Washington, D.C. on October 14th, where he is expected to sign the MDCA. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.